Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're definitely going to talk about Venom, like we said. But there's some other stuff we want to tackle first. You want to talk about shrinking or movie news first?
Let's do movie news, and then we'll just naturally go into shrinking after that. I think that the movie news is kind of like a good way to start our baseline.
So you just told me that Michael Cera is joining the Running Man cast, which is really interesting,
right? Like, I mean, it's a reunion for him with Edgar Wright, but like the whole thing is that I think that everybody forgot. I mean, it had been 10 years, but everybody forgot that he did a whole goddamn action movie in Scott Pilgrim, right? And then Barbie last year reminded us, because you know Greta Gerwig always like, you know, the gift that keeps on giving, right? And there's this whole action scene that plays in the background.
I want to talk about her for a second, too.
Okay, yeah. Oh, no, absolutely, absolutely. But it's just, like, great news because, like, I love Michael Cera. I've loved Michael Cera since Arrested Development. But it's, like, he's continually, like, eschewed, like, any kind of stardom. Like, the only thing that came close to it was like, Scott Pilgrim, but that's such a fucking odd duck of a movie, right? Like it made no money, but I mean everybody loves it now. But it's just like the cast that Edgar Wright is getting together for Running Man. I mean, Josh Brolin, Katie O'Brien, Lee Pace, Michael Cera, and now I mean, like, you know, and then they're still talking about the rumors of Sydney Sweeney because she hasn't signed yet. But I guarantee you, like, you know, Paramount is not going to let that go. Not going to let that retain, you know, Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney go. Like,
they seem to have a real thing going. Like,
yeah, they have great chemistry. I mean, if you watch their romantic comedy, I can't think of what the name of it is. I liked it a lot. And the main reason why I liked it so much was because, like, Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney definitely had chemistry. And it was definitely a movie that was, like, kind of lived up to romantic comedy status, which is something that I feel like doesn't often happen. But anywho, like this is the most interesting movie in development and going into production that I feel like that's out there right now. So yeah. Like, what we've kind of like touched upon the King story of it all, but like, how, like, what do you, like, are you a fan of Edgar Wright? Like, we've never had that conversation about, like,
I'm not a fan. But gotcha. I'm not the fan that almost like you, Spencer, Scott, I guess, to a degree, like most of the cinephiles that I know are they really, really appreciate and love Edgar Wright. And I don't have a problem with anything he's done. I've enjoyed every movie I've watched of his.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen almost everything, maybe his last few films I haven't seen.
Okay.
But either way, like I appreciate him as a director.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's great. I think he's funny. But it's just like nothing announced with him ever gets me like truly, truly excited.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Ant-Man, and we know how that turned out. So yeah. So it's really difficult to like gauge. I'm interested.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm excited. Okay. If that makes sense.
No, that like, does. That completely.
I'll go see it. Uh-huh. It'll be what it is, and I may like it. I may shrug it off. But like, I'm not like, oh my god, this is gonna the news is really incredible. The cast is great. It's just mm-hmm. nothing I've ever watched from him makes me think this is going to be my favorite movie of the year. So
absolutely. Absolutely. I can totally see that. Like for me, it's not like Edgar Wright has never made my favorite movie of the year. And I know that that's probably fucking like agitate somebody who like, oh, didn't you just say you were an Edgar Wright? Like, didn't Logan just say that you love Edgar Wright? And yeah, I do. But like, he's a guy that hasn't made that, like, to me, like, he's made great films, but they're so eccentric with the film stuff. Like, it's so film geeky eccentric. It's kind of like, it, you know what it is? Like,
Hot Fuzz is great, but if you don't know what Hot Fuzz is doing, it's just like another action movie.
Yeah, that's not
you have fun. To be ingrained in that, like, action genre, like, to really appreciate the craziness and, like, what he's actually doing. Yes. But, and that's really great. That's some fantastic craftsmanship and, like, his dedication to, like, just getting it right and paying homage to all of that stuff is lovely. Just like Scott Pilgrim with the video game stuff and, yes, and adapting, like, that from page to screen. But it also has never been, like, that for me. Like, I went and saw Scott Pilgrim with Ryan, and he loved that movie. And I thought it was great, but I didn't fall in love with it. I was like, yeah, like, it's really inventive. It's really fun. It's really funny. It's a great adaptation. But I didn't fall in love with it. And that is kind of a shame. But it is what it is.
I feel like I know that you'll get this. I feel like The Running Man could be Edgar Wright's chance at an Untouchables type of hit. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
De Palma was like, I feel like the analogy of old school 80s filmmakers and Edgar Wright is Brian De Palma. He's too smart for his own good. Like, he is like literally too smart for his own good. So he makes these movies that are kind of like flat circle traps. People love them because their mimicry and satire is so close to the surface. It's like, I watch Hot Fuzz, like you were saying, and Hot Fuzz is like a fucking Tony Scott movie, but it's making fun of Tony Scott movies. But it's not making fun of Tony Scott's movies because it's like, this is my love of Tony Scott and John Woo movies, right? And cop movies. But it's so close to the surface of that mimicry, like De Palma's work, that you go, is he fucking with me? Does he think I'm an asshole?
Maybe that's the thing, is that at least, maybe I've only seen four movies. So okay. I know I've seen the Cornetto trilogy. And Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen, he did one recently, right?
Yes, Last Night in Soho.
Yeah, I haven't seen Last Night in Soho.
Okay, that's like a straight up horror movie. Like, I love that movie. Like it now would be the perfect time.
I need to check that out.
It's on Peacock. Our favorite fucking.
So all those other movies are also homages to other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's riffing on something, and he does that really, really well. So
yeah.
Running Man, and well, unless I see Last Night in Soho before I see Running Man, which I mean, who knows with me? yes, like this would be me watching. I mean, it's still an adaptation, but it's not setting itself up from what we know really to be this like riff on something else.
No,
I guess the story itself is already kind of a riff, but it's not in the way that those other movies are. So, you know, yeah, I need to see Last Night in Soho and then watch this and like see where I'm at from there. Because I love the references. I love the riff, but it's like a really good cover, you know?
Yes. No, absolutely. And we kind of need to see, like, I never thought that we would be having an Edgar Wright, like pop discussion of like where his career needs to go. But it is funny because he does need to make a straight film, right? Like a not like, let's not fuck around. Let's not get cinematically geeky. Let's just do a straight fucking movie. Like, but I feel like The Running Man has the ability to be like, even if he decides to do something like, oh, well, this is going to be my Paul Verhoeven film. Even in that, like if he goes like, okay, this is kind of like my RoboCop, I'm going to go hard. That's the movie I want. I want the satire to be exactly what it was in RoboCop. And like, you know, Verhoeven has this weird kind of like tenacity to be able to make satire, but make the film super serious and it be its own thing. But inside of the movie, there's a satire. I feel like that's the kind of tricky tone that I want from this. But I also want it to be kind of like The Untouchables, where it's like, no, bro, I'm going to do a straight movie. It's going to not be sarcastic. It's not going to be playing with any tropes. I mean, you watch The Untouchables and it's like, it's hard to deny that that's like not the greatest De Palma movie, right? Like I know everybody loves Scarface and shit, and I know everybody loves Blowout, but if you're talking commercial, big budget movies, that fucking movie rocks. I mean, you have the kind of a similar cast, right? Like you have like A-listers, like Glenn Powell is kind of like the fit for Kevin Costner. You just kind of need that Sean Connery, and hell, who knows? Maybe the Sean Connery is Sidney Sweeney, right? Like, cause Connery is like the cherry on top of the sundae in The Untouchables. He's so fucking good. He's so fucking like just there, and you know, just like, I'm gonna do this role that you know I'm dead. Like it's like literally stamped on his head, right? Dead man walking. But I wish
Connery had made a career out of not being the lead and just being
like the Sean Bean.
I know he has, and I appreciate his James Bond. That's great. But yeah, like the best Sean Connery performances, in my opinion, at least that I've seen, are always, I don't want to say second fiddle, but definitely second lead. Like yes, you're talking about The Untouchables, Last Crusade is right there. Yep. The Rock. You're the man now, dog. those are like top tier Connery performances, you know? Like, even something as cheesy as the one he did with Michael Douglas's wife. What is the name of that movie?
Entrapment.
Yes.
You mean Booty Shot the movie.
Yeah.
Like, oh my
Where
God.
He's just kind of playing second lead second to middle. Her yeah. and her looks. And yeah. like, literally. It's so fun. It's stupid. It's not a great movie, but it's so fun watching him do stuff like that. So, but back to the original news, I think the biggest question I have with this, I'm glad that Michael Cera is in it.
Yeah.
Nothing, like, even if this were a remake of the original Schwarzenegger film,
oh God,
nothing in this screams Michael Cera is going to be in this movie. Because, like, he can do the action, like we've seen it a little bit in Barbie, yeah, definitely in Scott Pilgrim, but none of this screams Michael Cera. So
no,
I'm really interested to see where he fits into all of that.
That's the thing for me, is like, where does he fit in? Like, but that's the kind of casting I like. I like it when like you're surprised by like the choice, like it's not an obvious choice, right? It makes sense because, you know, Edgar Wright has directed him before. Many directors like using, especially on projects that are like this is the biggest project and the biggest budget that Edgar Wright has ever had, right? Like rumors $150 to $200 million. Like if this is the first Glenn Powell movie that it's like, Glenn Powell starring in a movie, a big budget movie, action movie that's coming to screens, like, you know, in like Christmas time on 3000 screens in IMAX. So it's interesting that the choices that they're making for that budget, because it's not like he's still casting it the way that he would, at least it feels to me, like if he only had $20 million, right? Like this cast, other than Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney, is a cast that interests me, but they're also guys that would work in the indie world with Edgar Wright with no hesitation whatsoever. And that's what interests me, is the fact that he's still continuing to do his Edgar Wright thing, but he's on a bigger palette and a bigger budget. So I want to see what that translates to. And hopefully it's something that, like, you know, is truly like elevates him, because I really like, it's kind of,
he's gonna get there. Like, yeah. It's almost undeniable. The charisma that he has. He would have to do some Army Hammer level shit, I think, to lose the head of steam that he's building up. All right, so I mentioned Greta Gerwig. I said I wanted to talk about her, and we didn't discuss this beforehand, but I did see where she is fighting a, I think they called it a quiet battle with Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck is that about? Like, okay, so like, set the stage for everybody.
So she's developing a franchise potentially for Netflix in the Chronicles of Narnia. Which I guess Disney no longer has the rights for. Because am I wrong? They held the rights for like the longest time.
Yeah, it was lost. Disney lost them because of the last movie, or like their last movie that they produced. Then Walden Media, which was like the book company, Walden Books, made a movie, and the movie didn't make any money. And
who made the last one?
Yep.
I liked the last one.
The one with Ben Barnes?
Yeah, I thought, I didn't think it was great, right?
The Dawn of the Sea Trader. Yes, they made that, and then I think that Disney released it, but it was all produced by Walden, right? Because they gave up the rights. Disney did. And then Walden, I think, folded, and that's where we are right now, where Netflix folded. Where Netflix, the funniest part is that, like, all the reports are she's fighting. Like, okay, so, like, I'll let you finish. But yes.
So like, she's developing this. Yes. Netflix picked up the rights, probably in the scramble of like, fuck. Like, they've got Game of Thrones, and Disney's got everything Disney's got. And then Amazon's got some of the Tolkien stuff. Like, who understands that? We've got to have something.
Well, like, you know that Warner Brothers is making those movies with Peter Jackson now.
Yeah.
So, like, what the fuck? It's two so movies.
Also they have Harry Potter, Warner does. I guess Amazon was like, we need something like that. And they picked up the Narnia rights. Netflix. Brought in Greta Gerwig, which I think is fantastic. I really like her for this. Like, she could bring like something really fresh to this franchise and not have it completely steeped in like pseudo Christianity, which it kind of is. But she very much wants theatrical films. Netflix does not have a theatrical model unless they have something that they think is going to win them an Oscar. They don't put anything in theaters. And even then, it's what, like a 2-week engagement in like LA and Chicago and like maybe New York and like two theaters. So they did it with what, Scorsese, The Irishman?
Yes. They did, which all of the numbers, they tried to hide the numbers, but then the theaters, and this is the reason why they got into the theater business, so that they could hide the numbers. The numbers were so great. The numbers were doing, like, that score, like, The Irishman did so much money in those, like, seven theaters that people were like, why the fuck aren't they doing theatrical? Because if they had expounded it out, like, A, The Irishman could have won Best Picture, and B, the movie would have made money. Like, absolutely. I mean, it's the same thing with The Glass Onion. Do you remember, like, the whole thing with The Glass Onion? How they released it over, what, Thanksgiving weekend. It makes $25 million. They leave it another week. It ends up making close to $50 million. And then they're like, no, we're done. You'll see it in December on Netflix. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
How the fuck? What are you doing?
I don't understand it. I do not understand it. But it's whatever. We don't run that business. But
no.
I guess she was under the impression that, that these were going to be theatrically, I can't speak, released. And they're currently in a quiet war with each other.
Yep.
And I feel like they lose her if they do not give her a big enough theatrical window. Like, I understand, like even if they make a shit ton of money, that Netflix's model is not to leave this in theaters for months when they could be pulling people into their app.
Here's the thing, though, with that. I read news, and it always interests me, like, these streamers and stuff, right? And here's the biggest lie that Netflix ever told, is that the biggest platform streamers that they have, like, what consistently gets into their top 10 and stays in their top 10 are kids films that were huge in theatrical and huge old sitcom comedies. That's what stays in their top 10s. So, like, they buy the Minions movies, right? And those Minion movies, like, are the Despicable Me, Illumination stuff. They buy all of that from Universal, right? After Universal has had it on Peacock. Those fucking movies, like, stream literally hundreds of millions of times. So my question is that if those are the biggest things and your Netflix movies don't make a quarter of those things, why aren't you producing your own content, releasing it in theatrical, waiting 6 months, and putting it on the stream?
If Netflix would put themselves firmly in the we create kids movies, release them theatrically for a month, and then get kids in theaters, get people talking about it. You got to produce, like, good content, and then are good content for kids. The Minions movies are not good content, but yeah, like, and then they just watch them endlessly, and people have to pay for your fucking Netflix subscription because, Jesus, my kids just want to watch the Minions movie. For, like, Netflix should have bought Illumination, is what they should have done.
They really should. And I guarantee you, they probably had the chance and they didn't do it. They're so tech bro that they don't even know. They don't care. And that's the thing that we're finding. Like,
what bums me out about this, like, I get the Rings of Power is a show, Game of Thrones is a show, like, as much as they can be theatrical looking, yes, but, like, she's making a movie. Like, you're bringing her in to make movies, not a fucking show. Like, if you want to stream it, make it a show. Like, people would probably still show up for the show. But,
well, yeah, because it's Greta Gerwig.
Yeah. And it's a recognizable property, like, even though it's not as currently relevant as those other things, it's still something that people know. and adults know, and you know, maybe get their kids to like, hey, I really loved this book when I was a kid, you know, like let's watch this show. But she, you brought her in to make movies, and this is going to be something you hope really cinematic. Why the fuck do you want people to watch it on their phone? It's also going to be expensive.
Yes. Like, that's the thing that I think that they're trying, like, right now, what I read when I did my deep dive is they're just trying to throw more money at her to shut her up. But I feel like Greta, after having, like, so her husband is also another director, right? And he's had nothing. This is the oddest part, is Noah Baumbach had said after they released his last film, and it went nowhere, right? Marriage Story was like pretty big, right? It got Oscar nominations. It got, I think he won for best screenplay, the Oscar. Yeah, actually he did. It was a big movie, right? His last movie, The Meyerowitz Story, did nothing. It landed like a fucking thud. And he blamed them because they didn't promote it. They didn't do the Oscar rollout the way that they did for Marriage Story, that they guaranteed him. And so he was like, you know what? Even down to the look of the film, because he shot it in 16 millimeter, and the first thing that they produced, they were like, oh, let us do this. And the Netflix dudes literally wiped it clean and made it look like a Netflix movie. And he was like, fuck you guys. I'm not going to let you make this movie into a Netflix movie. This is a Noah Baumbach movie, as was my movie before that and the movie before that that you produced. And I keep on having to tell you that. And so they released it, but because he didn't do what they wanted him to do, guess what they did? They dumped it. And so he was like, I'm never with them again.
It's like, that is also why I wanted to see Marriage Story. I just never got around to it. But like, I also haven't seen a Noah Baumbach directed film since Francis Ha. Which was 12 years ago. I mean, he's done
Adult Grown. I can't think of the name of it, what it's called. He did Mistress America.
Yeah, Mistress America, While We're Young. He did that De Palma was a documentary, right?
Yes, he did do the it's just called De Palma. It was White Noise that finally sent him over the edge, because like White Noise was like this, like it was literally like a $100 million movie that he made that they didn't promote, and they released it in one theater. Like they were like, oh, we'll release it in theatrically one theater.
Meanwhile, these two people are responsible for a $1 billion film.
More than $1 billion. Like Barbie is literally the cultural, like it is, like it still is like a cultural touchstone, right? We're never going to get rid of it. Like it's in the air. Like it is, like it's like Star Wars, right? Like it literally is. Like, I understand why they decided to take a couple of years off and try to figure out how to approach the next one, because how the fuck do you approach the next one?
So I look at all of that and I'm like, how are you not looking at her and just being like, I get you want to have like some power here, but just like, you got a 6-week theatrical run, or even a 4-week theatrical, like big theatrical run, not 4 weeks in a fucking 6 theaters in 3 states.
In Parambis, New Jersey and shit.
You got a 4-week wide release theatrical run. Then it's hitting Netflix.
Exactly. Like use Beetlejuice as an example. I don't know. Like, and here's the thing. If you do a 6-week window, look at Beetlejuice. If you use the Beetlejuice as the most recent model, Beetlejuice made 300 million dollars. That's $50 million a week. And they still premiered it on Premiere VOD, and people were still seeing it in the theaters.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
All the numbers point to this would be a good, But the thing you have to do is not say, like, I mean, it's one thing to have it in the trades, but, like,
yeah,
you don't make it part of the marketing that, like, oh, hey, in a month you're going to be able to see this on Netflix, so don't go fucking see it in the theater. Like, don't do that. Like, we all know now, instinctively, that, like, a couple months in, we're going to get to see this on streaming.
Yeah.
But just don't make it part of the marketing. But yeah, it's baffling to me. Of all people, like, were we flipping this and talking about, like, Edgar Wright is the person that has the Running Man deal with Netflix and he's fighting for a theatrical release? I might could look at that case and be like, you know, like, I hope you get it, man. But, like, you're fighting a losing battle. Like, because you're nothing against Edgar Wright, but you're not the guy who 2 years ago, or yeah, was it
2022? Yeah. Oh, no, 2023, last year.
Oh, it was last year. Fuck. Yeah, not even 2 years ago. You weren't the guy who literally 14 months ago or whatever dropped a movie in theaters that not only was, like, a huge cultural touchstone, but a bona fide, like, just hit. Like, hit's not even the right word. There's not a fucking, it's a juggernaut, you know? I don't understand.
Bomb. Like a cultural nuclear bomb.
Yeah. I don't understand having that fight with her. Like, at least with the first movie. At least with the first movie. Like, yeah, we're going to give you, like, and if it does nothing and, like, we continue forward and you're part of this process, you know, if the movie doesn't do anything, I don't know that we can give you a theatrical release for another one. There's got to be some kind of middle ground here. That's what's baffling to me, is the like, standing firm on the... They're like, no, it's because we'll just premiere it on Netflix. Like, dude, no. Yeah, so much shit just gets buried on Netflix. Yep. That, like, algorithms do nothing to promote art, man.
Nothing.
Anyway, that's my rant about all of that. Because I actually have a lot of appreciation, maybe not love, for those Narnia books. I don't know, I would love to, I thought the previous adaptations were pretty good, but I would love to see something, like, just outstanding, you know? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
So other news was, I think we briefly talked about, like, oh, hey, Tom Holland said that there's a script for Spider-Man 4. Well, not only is there a script and they read it, but apparently they start shooting next summer.
Yeah, for 2026, like a summer of 2026 release. Also, very interestingly, a side note, it's not really a side note, it's actually probably the biggest.
Blade is no longer in development.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Let's not even talk about that, bro. Like, my hope is, sidebar. My hope is that this just frees the way for our legacy sequel for Wesley.
Because
Wesley,
maybe that's why they took it off the schedule.
Like, I hope. Because we can't say anything more than that, right? Like, we can only hope that that's the case. But even bigger, like, I know it sounds weird, but I feel like this is bigger news that got kind of buried because we got the date for Spider-Man. Tom Holland is starring in the Christopher Nolan film, like the next, like post fucking Oppenheimer. Like, he joins Matt Damon, and they don't know, like, all they know is it's not set in the present. So it could be a future film. It could be a past film. And it has, like, rumor is that it's a straight up horror movie. Like they don't know, like, all they know is that it's like hard into horror, and it's either in the past or in the future, but it's not present day set.
Did we talk about the, like, I don't know if we talked about this, but I only recently read it about, but we've talked about Nolan's feud with Warner Brothers.
Yes.
But I don't think we talked about, I just found out that apparently Warner Brothers just gave him a check at some point.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. This is fucking wild. This is them trying to like extend the olive branch and say, we fucked up. Is they gave him all of his, okay. So he deferred his salary for Tenet. Like, and his Tenet salary is somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 million. That's the package that he, like, without first dollar gross, right? Like, it's $25 million to produce, write, and direct. That's what it was. But he deferred it because it was such a big movie. And, like, you know, he wanted, like, they gave him
more. He wanted the budget, right?
Yeah. He wanted the budget. And also, Thomas also deferred her $10 million salary. So that was $35 million there. And supposedly Warner Brothers just gave them a blank, like gave them the check for his fees.
The falling out.
Yes.
As sort of a mea culpa, like
yeah,
almost without begging, without begging to like, hey, can we sit down and have a chat? And look, I go back and like, there's some Nolan movies I love and some I'm just like, but fucking baller move to like, I not saying he didn't deserve the money, but baller move to like take that $35 million check, cash it, and then still just be like, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm going to want like,
go Universal fuck is, yourself.
Universal has set me up proper. I mean, because like, if you think about it, like, okay,
not,
so like,
not even have a discussion, just be like, nope. Oh, thank you. Also, fuck you.
I'm done. It's also got.
I was done. I'm done.
Like that just proves to me that like that makes me like him a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like it makes me go, yeah, dude, take that check, cash the check, and tell them to fuck off because they didn't make your masterpiece. Like literally, I can almost see him go, like, that's nice, thank you, mate, and then just walk away, and then I'm going, what? Wait. We thought that we, like, you know, this is not how it works. And it's like, this is absolutely how it works, motherfucker. The only thing
better would be for him to take his own money, buy Batgirl, and then release it.
Oh, my God. That would have been hilarious. Or no. The best part would have been if he went, you know what you guys should do? Like, not even say, I'll come back, but just say, you know what you should do is get rid of Zaslav. I think that needs to happen. Like, I honestly think that needs to happen. They fire his ass and then he goes, oh, that's great. And just continues on with his life.
Yeah.
Like continues on with his movies and all that stuff. And like just gets Zaslav fired with the notion that they think that they could bring him back.
So Tom Holland, like, but my thing is like, that's awesome. Tom Holland in a Nolan movie might be the thing that finally pulls him out and makes him a legitimate star, not just a kid that plays Spider-Man.
Exactly.
I hope that's great. When the fuck are they making this movie? Like, it's not going to be for at least a year.
They're eyeing a 2026 release, which means that, so Nolan's stuff is so practical. So
they'll have a Spider-Man 4 and a Chris Nolan movie at the end of 2026. That's...
Yep.
Wild. So they've got to be filming back to back then.
They probably are, you know.
So
like rumor is Nolan's done with the script. Like when they start announcing casting, I guess like he's already well into pre-production. So this shit could go as early as like the beginning of 2025. Like and then like you know whatchamacallit. I know that they've said the Spider-Man movie is supposed to begin production summer of 2025.
Or Tom Holland's 2025 is going to be fucking ridiculous. He's going to be so big because Nolan's shoots are pretty long.
Yeah. So I
and Marvel shoots, like they'll shoot and then they'll reshoot.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're shooting next summer, they'll probably be doing reshoots by the end of the year.
Yep.
And yep. If Nolan's going camera early 2025, like he's going to be filming. If that's when they start shooting, he's going to be filming up until he hit set for Spider-Man.
Yep. And that makes sense to where he put it in his schedule to take so much time off. Like, if you think about it, that makes absolute sense. Like, if you're ramping up, because, like, let's be honest, like, when they announce this, it's usually about 2 or 3 months before they even know, like, it's after they've already been cast, right? Or, like, they're already starting that process. Like, Nolan probably started this back in, like, he was already writing the script. He already knew he was, because he had mentioned it during the Oppenheimer tour. He was like, I'm working on finalizing a script, and it'll probably be something that I do in a couple of years, or in a year, like, if everything goes according to plan. So he was already working on it, and I guarantee you, he probably already knew who he wanted to get, and or somebody like this. And I mean, you know, when you're like, it's weird, because, like, when you're Chris Nolan, you get exactly who you want, right? Like, You wanted Tom Holland for whatever reasons, right? You got Tom Holland. Like, you got the guy who has, like, you didn't go with T-Shams. You didn't go with any, like, you didn't go with Austin Butler. You didn't go with, who is the other guy? Jacob Elordi. You have all these crop of, like, the premier young guys, right? The young guns. And you went with Holland. Like, that says something about what specifically you're looking for, right? Like, it almost feels like you're hiring
him because of his... says something about the fact that you just spent a couple of years ago, I don't know, a few months shooting with Robert Downey Jr., who maybe wouldn't shut the fuck up about Tom Holland.
Very, very fucking true. Holland has
not been shy about, like, a lot of my career at this point I owe to Robert Downey Jr. and, like, working with him, his appreciation of me, like, he's been very vocal about that. So not to say that doesn't mean he doesn't deserve it. He absolutely does. I think Tom Holland's great. I think the problem is he's just, because that was his breakout role, like, he's finding himself kind of in danger of being a little Chris Reeve, Mark Hamill thing,
or Fox. Like, I always think of Fox. Like, and, like, though Fox was able to finally pull out of it,
nothing ever hit the success that his TV show and the Back to the Future films did.
No,
like, but Spin City, yes, but, like, yeah, Spin City was not as big as Family Ties.
No, absolutely not. But also, he never, like, Fox had some directors, but he didn't have a Nolan would be the equivalent of Mike Fox being cast in a Spielberg movie.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
in that era, like, that's what, like, I don't know,
in a Spielberg, like, drama. Not, yeah, you know, not one of his popcorn flicks, like an actual, like, it would have been like, instead of Tom Hanks, like, he took Michael J. Fox under his wing. Of course, by then, like, unfortunately, it is what it is. But yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, good for Tom Holland. Like, 2026 is going to be a huge fucking year for him. He's going to have maybe two of the top 5 films at the box office, depending on when the Nolan film gets released. And definitely he's going to have one of the biggest films of the year, probably 2, because odds are pretty good he's going to be in the Avengers movie. So he's going to have 2 of the biggest films of the year. And maybe if that's a December release for Nolan, you know, I don't know that he'll get Oscar buzz, but it's a Nolan movie, it'll get Oscar buzz.
Oh yeah. So, it'll get, like, regardless of what kind of movie it is, they're like, it's gonna get buzz. Like, regardless if it's like a fucking horror movie, it'll still get Oscar buzz because it's fucking Christopher fucking Nolan.
I mean, Tenet was, I still haven't seen it, but Tenet, like, it was still, like, it was in categories, right? Like, special effects and, like, sound design and, like,
yeah.
So
I think that Inception is the gold standard of box office blockbuster and like awards because like it was nominated for everything, right?
Yeah.
Like he thought that he was going to win that first Oscar, that first directing Oscar because of that. So, but I mean, now that that's off the, like, you know, now that he's already gotten his Oscar, like, I feel like we're getting a new, like, I always like it when you find a director, like, post best director, what are they doing? Like, what do they want to do? Like, what is his, like, if he makes a horror movie, that says a lot about Christopher Nolan, right? That means that you did the award spotter and that's fine, right? Like you wanted to do that. And I get that. But then your next movie is your free ticket. So you can do whatever you fucking want.
Meanwhile, Spielberg's calling Nolan and going like, when you direct Schindler's List and Jurassic Park in the same year, give me a call.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't think Nolan will ever do that. He's too
methodical. No, he's too...
He's too fucking Kubrick to do it. You know, the funnier thing will be is if he casts fucking Zendaya. Like, if we get another Zendaya Tom Holland movie along with the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, that'll be wild. She might be too busy making Dune by then. Like, maybe that's the thing that we don't know is that they've already got a tentative start date for this third Dune movie that's movie? Probably definitely happening. And so this will be them, like she's going to be away filming. He knew Spider-Man, like they'll film Spider-Man together, but then they'll be apart filming the two auteur movies. You know, good for those kids, man. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. But yeah, like I'm like, it's all to say that I'm always pro, like any guy who is as honest and kind of like to the surface the way that Holland is, like he's so excited, right? Like,
did you see his Jimmy Kimmel interview?
Oh my God, yes.
That shit was so funny. He was like, yeah, you played a trick on me like last time you were on the show, or we did the, like, it was during lockdown, and he's like,
yeah,
you know, we did that Skype interview and you're like, yeah, it would be great if they're in the movie, but that would be news to me. And Tom's like, yeah, I just come from set filming with Toby and Andrew.
he's just like a, like he's like kind of like Andrew Garfield, where there's this layer that's not there yet. Like,
it wasn't Jimmy Kimmel. Like, it was, sorry.
Oh, it was Jimmy Fallon.
Fallon.
Yeah. They both did interviews because he's doing his whole like his non-alcoholic beer, which I've got a place that actually has it, so I'm going to go and actually get a six pack of it because I want to try it. I'm not sober like he is, like, or anything, like I'm not like anti drinking, but I'm just curious what beer-o tastes like, because supposedly it's legit. Like, it tastes like a beer. And it doesn't have, like, that weird aftertaste that non-alcoholics do. But he's on this tour to do this whole, like, I made a beer. I made a non-alcoholic beer because I was having problems and I'm sober now. I guarantee he's California sober. What
trouble did he get in that we don't know about?
I'm fairly certain that he probably, I know this sounds weird and it's a little too personal, but I always feel like whenever shit like this happens, it's because your girl woke you the fuck up and said, you're being a shitty drunk. You better fix yourself.
Yeah.
And when, like, it's the only thing I can think of that would make an alcoholic, an English alcoholic, which means that they're not even alcoholics. They're just fucking, it's like the Irish with therapy.
Yeah.
The Irish cannot be therapized, right? Like, the English cannot be not drunk. So, like, the only way that I feel like it could be something that on a level where he was like, oh, shit, is Zendaya probably was like, you're acting like a shitty fucking drunk, and you need to sober the fuck up or else I'm gone. And was like, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, because that would scare the shit out of me. If my wife, if my wife, who I adore my wife, and I kiss the ground she walks on, if she fucking went and she looked me straight in the eye and said, "You have a fucking drinking problem and you need to sober the fuck up."
Yes, Adam. Gone, but what if she said you have a DVD problem?
I guess I'm fucking, I guess I'm selling my DVDs. I guess I'm selling my, my DVDs.
I'm going to clip this out and send it to you so you can play it for her.
If she does say that, then you know what? I guess Logan is inheriting a 7,000 piece Blu-ray DVD collection.
I have nowhere to put that.
It's just going to be boxes up every week, like three or four boxes of each.
Speaking of, you mentioned before we started recording that y'all watched an entire series this past week.
Yes. Okay, so I've been on, like, you and I both talked about this. I've been on very file about being, like, hating romantic comedy shit. Especially.
Oh, my God. I don't want to watch this, man. Was it that good? Because I feel like I know what you're going to say.
Okay, so, yeah, nobody wants this on that.
I don't want it.
I didn't even want it. But, you know, when you have, like, so, it's good.
I'm happy for them, and I'm happy it's doing really well. Like, everybody that talks about has talked about how great it is.
Well, okay, so the reason why it's great is that, so, I didn't, like, so, like, the current era of, like, rom-com shit is all about, like, people cheating and people lying and people, like, making trouble for themselves when there doesn't have to be trouble, right? Like, and this show basically takes that concept and throws it out and basically says, these people are in love and that isn't the issue. Lying isn't the issue. Doing stupid shit isn't the issue. Like, people are like, you know, when you fall in love with somebody, it's like, you want to work with them. You want to collaborate with them. You want to be a couple. And that's what this movie, this show gets right. But what it also gets right is it's not you as a couple that interferes with your relationship. It's your family. It's your friends. It's your work.
It's all the outside influences. Yeah,
it's exactly. And this show 150% gets that right. Like, you are actively rooting for Noah and Joanne, who are the Adam Brody and Kristen Bell characters, right? Like, and they're not perfect. They're just, like, really good people. And you watch it, and the chemistry is fucking there. Like, really there. Like,
even, even Dax Shepard was like,
yes.
Like, I think somebody's stealing my wife. He was just like the chemistry that the two of these people have. Like, I'm watching my wife having, like, real chemistry with another man. And it is, like, just, like, undeniable.
Yes. I cannot explain to you the, like, you watch one episode and then you end up watching four. And then you stop yourself because you're like, fuck, I only have 10 of these.
Yeah.
And then you continue on. And it's just, like, everything rings true in this show. This, like, yes, it's about affluent people in Los Angeles, but it's got this tone that strikes the right balance of comedy and romance. Like, I've never felt so kind of, like, yes, they did it when they kiss, when they first kiss, like when they finally kiss and they have that moment. And it's like, it's like this, there's a romance to it. There's a kind of sexiness to it. And it's like, it's because you like these fucking characters so much. They have so much charm and energy going between them, but not just them. Like, everybody in the cast is kind of rolling right away. Like, you know, that feeling that you got when, okay, like, let's go back to Parks and Rec and season 2 into 3. And this is before Pratt was a piece of shit, right? When you watched April and Andy start to circle each other, and it's not in the same way, but it's like that genuine chemistry that's there. And you go, fuck, I really like these two people. I want them to get together. And then they instantly get together and you're like, yes, that's what I wanted. That's the kind of way it feels on this show, is that it, but very different. Like, it's very much of, it's of an, like, it's with characters that are within our age range, and they don't act like teenagers or 20-year-olds. They have real-world problems, and they have, like real divides. And it's kind of, like, a great show that, like, I just turned to my wife after, like, 3 episodes, and I was like, this is what I've been missing. I don't want the Outer Banks bullshit. I don't give a fuck about teenagers. Give me somebody around my age range that's good looking, but also have chemistry and kind of promote what it's like to fall in love in your 30s. And like, yeah, like realistically fall in love in your 30s and what that means. It's great. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's one of the best things that I've seen all year, and it's fucking Netflix. And it has a wealth of like different actors that all get their due, like all get their like roles. It's kind of like fun to watch this show start off about two people and concentrically expand out to their entire family by the end when they like leave it on this kind of very perfect cliffhanger. You've gotten to know at least 10 people in this family and gotten to know them fairly well and like them, even if they're making moves that you don't agree with and you go, fuck, come on, guys. It's still like, I like these people. I want to spend time with them. And it's like, it's just a rom-com that actually works for me. And that's so rare because everything is fucking trash out there. Like, I realized, I'm like, is there a show that isn't about cheating, that isn't about lying or being a fucking narcissist about your fucking life and creating issues? This is the kind of, this is the show that you watch when you don't want to watch that stupid shit.
Yeah, I may or may not get to it. To be completely honest, I am not in a place in my life where I enjoy anything romantic at all. I just find it all upsetting. And I'm like, I got my dog, man. And like, as someone who is trying to date, it is like the trash is way more accurate for me because that's all there seems to fucking be is just people lying about everything. And so like the like true sweet stuff is really hard for me to digest right now. So
I get it. No, I totally fucking get it because, yeah, I mean, it's trash out there. There's a lot of trash people and a lot of people that think they're the star of their own fucking reality series.
Yep.
So they all fucking think that they're the Kardashians and they decide to fucking act like the Kardashians, and everything they pick up on social media, they want to do. Like, I don't think that people realize that a situationship is not a good thing.
Yeah.
If you're in a situationship, then you are fucked up. Dude,
I don't want to get into it, but in the last few weeks, I had somebody tell me that because of my age, the fact that I've never been married and I don't have kids is a giant red flag. And I'm like, yet if I had been married twice and I had 3 kids by 2 different people, you'd be like, oh, that's sweet. He's got kids. What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, because I didn't make bad choices.
Yes.
And bring your children into the world in situations that aren't going to last. That is a red flag to you.
Nope. It's not a red flag. And we both know that. That's not even a beige flag. I don't even what the fuck people are talking. You know what? Like, whoever that person was, like, obviously, you know what? You didn't feel comfortable with your life decisions. Don't bring that bullshit on my friend or anybody else. Like, seriously, like that's your bullshit. That's your fucked upness.
I would be the asshole if I was like, oh, you've been married 3 times and you got 4 kids by 3 different people. That's a red flag.
But that is a red flag.
I would be the asshole. I'd be like, yeah. Clearly you don't make great choices. Like you just operate on like what feels good in the moment instead of like trying to look at things long term. And I'm not saying that there's not, that it can't be, you know, a good thing that you got out of bad situations. It absolutely is. But like to look at somebody and be like, oh, you're 45 and you've never been married and you don't have kids. What's wrong with you? Like, what's wrong with me is I didn't choose the wrong people. Just yes. because everybody kept telling me, well, you got to get married and you got to have kids. And why? Because that's what you did. Like, meanwhile, most of the people I know have been divorced at least once, if yep. not twice. So
haters, man, fucking haters, dude, because you know what? Like, you know my story. I mean, I didn't get married until I was 40. I didn't get into, like, I've had many relationships, right? Some of them fucking terrible. Some of them awful, like, truly awful. The last one before Christina, awful. Fucking ridiculously awful. Like, it fucking, like, it decimated me, right? But once I found, like, it was 39 when I met Christina. Like, I was just shy of 40, right? And, I mean, yes, she was younger. But the whole thing is that never been married. She'd never been married. Like... And it's like, it's not like, I look at it, it's like, that wasn't a bad on me, because if I had married any one of my exes, Jesus Christ, would I have been stupid. Like, at least yeah. I wasn't stupid enough to get married to one of my crazy ass exes, right?
Like, yeah, you're talking about entering into, like, being unsure and entering into something that it literally takes legal documentation to break yep. up.
Well, it takes legal documentation to make legal. Like it's like, it's not like, I don't get it. I don't get why people are like, oh, like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, this is a life-changing thing, right? Like, this isn't something you go into like, oh, we're going to get married. Like, it's like,
that's the way a lot of people go into marriage.
Yes, I know.
I'm not saying that people like that you should go in and like, you know, it's real when you don't have any doubts. Like, you're always going to have doubts about everything. And I don't want to turn this into a relationship podcast, but like, it just like, if you're doing it just because, quote, it's what you're supposed to do. Like, I know so many people that live their life that way. And like, I can be unhappy, but like, they're far unhappier than I, like, they're just yes. saddled with so much like just bullshit. Cause like, well, this is what I was supposed to do. Like, because somebody told you that? I don't, anyway, let's talk about Venom.
Yes. Okay. Well, before Venom, do we want to talk a little Shrinking? Because we've both seen.
Oh, that's right. That first episode of Shrinking, spoilers for Shrinking, guys. I'm with you on this first episode. Like, we were so excited for the show to come back.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for the heaviness of the first episode.
Good God, I was not. So I only watched the first episode, and after the reveal,
it doesn't get any lighter.
Okay, so yeah, we haven't watched it since. Like, I actually like the week that I had, like that Saturday night when I watched it, literally was like, nope, I'm good, I'm fucking good. Let's watch something else. Like, literally after the reveal of like. Okay, so, like, we know, like, so this season is basically going to be dealing with Jimmy, the death of Jimmy's wife, but not in the way that we think it's going to be. It's about the man who killed, like, who, quote-unquote, killed his wife, played by, drumroll please, a beardless Brett Goldstein. Who's, like, who created the show, who...
I was so... shocked to see him stepped yeah. in. Like, I knew he's part of the show. I knew he was a co-creator. Yeah. I knew he works on the show. But for him to step into that role.
Yeah.
That's like, so heavy, man.
Well, and it's like, I understand why you picked him. Because if there's anybody that could play that and turn that around, possibly, it's Brett Goldstein, right? Like, we watched Roy Kent evolve over three seasons. But this is so fucking heavy. Like, and they don't, like, it's not like they warned you, or they could have warned you, because this is like, that's part of it, right? Like the surprise.
Oh yeah, it comes out of nowhere. You don't even know who he is.
No, but you know something's wrong because you keep on seeing this guy and his head is covered and you're like, who the fuck? Oh man, this is going to be bad. You know it's going to be bad or good? Like, because, like, you know, you're kind of dealing with the kind of Ted Lasso of it all, but I feel like they're kind of making, like, I don't know whether, like you said, it's going to get worse, but I feel like they're trying to make a stamp on this where it's like, you know, you love these characters, but this is not going to be Ted Lasso. This is not going to end nicely, because what Jimmy is doing, and this is the whole thing, is like, this is the problem that I've had with the first season, is that there were no repercussions for Jimmy doing some crazy ass shit. If you've ever been into therapy, I mean, I'll be honest, I've been in therapy for like 10 years, right? Like, and I know that people will say, oh, what the hell? That's 10 years. It's like, no, there's always problems and you always need a third party to talk to. So fuck you if you think that my going to therapy for 10 years is is abnormal. It's you that has the problem if you're not in therapy, motherfuckers. Anyways, I know well enough about that. And also my wife is a therapist. Like, she's a social worker. Like, she has a license. She's basically a mental health clinician. We watched like love the show, but the therapizing that he gives, like, holy shit, it's bad.
And which is, you know, why you need that, the Harrison Ford's character to constantly be like, you're fucking up. Like, you're doing this wrong. Like, I know you think you're helping these people, which it kind of plays out. Like, we end season one with one of his patients pushing her husband off a cliff.
Yeah.
And like,
literally sitting there going boop, boop.
And like, now we're dealing with the fallout from that. But it's not just that fallout. Like, he thinks he's helped Sean to a great deal. Like, he has helped him a lot, but there's also, I can't get too much into it, but like, as much as he's helped him, there are also things that, like, he hasn't really addressed, like, that he just thrown dirt over to cover up, that are going to, like, come up. There's problems with his daughter that, you know, they can't really talk about, that are going to come up. They're like, he's not done what he thought he had done. And having to deal with, like, seeing that one of his patients did that, I think starts a domino effect of him understanding that he's not necessarily on the right path. And coming face to face with the drunk driver that killed his wife, like, is a big, like, grab you by the shoulders, shake you, and like, hey man, like, you're not in the good place that you thought you were in. His relationship with his friend,
the gay lawyer, right?
Yeah, like, it's not in the place that he thought it was. His romantic relationship with his coworker and friend, like, that's not in the place that he thought. Like, it's you get to this comfortable place and you think you're happy, but you still haven't dealt with all the shit that you should have already dealt with. Like, you're trying to move on and you haven't actually dealt with any of the problems. And I think coming face to face with him, like, really brought that back to him, even though he does immediately try to cover it up and just be I'm fine. Like, everything's fine. So
you need to leave. Like, even though he's fucking yelling at the top of his lungs, you need to leave. And also like, it's like the past, like, you may be done with the past, but the past is not done with you.
Yeah.
Like that's literally like what it was, a lot to process, because it's like, you're expecting, like, the thing, and I understand it's mirroring life in a lot of ways. Like, you know, it's like, Like, life doesn't, like, you may be fine with life, but life is like, no, we've got some stuff that we need to handle, so I'm going to do this. And, like, just decides to smack you in the face. And that's what the show does.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to have, like, I don't know, like, even though I've seen two episodes that you haven't seen, I don't know what, whatever the character's name that Brett Goldstein's playing, I don't know his reasoning for this. I would imagine it's that he's sober and he's working steps.
Yeah. No, that sounds like
that feels like what it is. And he, mm-hmm. like, part of that is like getting to a place where you have to,
Accept responsibility for your actions and like he's and also like asking for forgiveness. That's the steps that he's on right now.
Yeah. Maybe definitely not getting it, but like making your own amends and mm-hmm. coming face to face with like the results of your actions. And like it's such a even though I imagine therapists will tell you like a lot of that AA 12-step stuff, they don't really like ascribe to, like, but some of it is very powerful, you know, like understanding that you're, you know, there's a higher power, even if the higher power is fucking gravity, you know, like stuff like that, like realizing that there are forces in the universe that you cannot control. And like following those things, like will get you to a better place, but it is very, very difficult. So having a guy like try to follow that path and it lead him face to face, like with the husband of the person he killed, who is a therapist, is a really interesting dynamic.
Very much so. Like that, like this is going to be like, once I get back into it and I'm okay with like going ahead and watching this, because it's not something that you want to watch on a Saturday night, right?
No,
like
it's a lot heavy. Like I know the first season was pretty heavy, but like it starts off heavy and then got progressively like a little bit lighter.
Yeah,
but I think they also recognize that, which is why the show ends with, not that that's a bad thing, but it's why it ends the way it, season one ends the way it ends. And mm-hmm. season two, like I'm three episodes in and there are moments of likeness, but yeah, there is like dealing with her pushing her husband off the cliff, the his wife's killer. Yeah. Like his crumbling relationship with his coworker and with his best friend, and like you know, his I think it's in the first episode, right? Where he wakes up, his daughter is watching him sleep because she's so worried about him. Like it's a lot. And so, yeah, it's a lot heavy. And that doesn't even mention like the stuff going on with, Sean.
What's his name? Harrison Ford's character.
Yeah. So,
you know, which is lighter, but it's still
heavy shit. You know, it's a guy with Parkinson's. So, it's a lot. It's a lot heavier than like where we were by like the third episode of season one, I think. So,
absolutely.
But it's still it's absolutely solid. It's just not mm-hmm. like, oh, this is so lighthearted and fun and funny, and you know, it's not. It's really, really heavy shit.
It really is. Like, and I wasn't prepared for that. But then, like, you know, when are you ever prepared for something like that if they don't warn you? Like, and that's the thing. It's like, and I'm not asking them to warn.
Yeah,
you. Like,
I could have warned you, but like, I don't want to.
Well, it's all in what
say anything like, that would try to give anything away. So,
well, okay, like, and that's not you. It's the responsibility of the storytellers and the marketing to kind of prepare you for something that's going to be like. There's nothing in that trailer, because I went back to the trailer and watched it, and there's nothing in there that says we're going to go a little bit darker, but go with us. It's like the same stuff, like, oh, Jimmy, you're doing the bad stuff. I'm going to keep on doing it. Like, that's literally the tone of the trailer. It's not like this, you're going to have to deal with some shit and then show some of the shit that they're having to deal with.
Yeah.
But on the other side of things, like, you were right. Like, more Ted. Like just, goddamn, that was so nice. That was just so nice.
Hey, it hasn't stopped. Three episodes in, I mean, he's gotten, I think he's done more in the first three episodes of this season than he did all of last season.
Oh, God, that's great. Like, I mean, how can you not love him? Like, he's so good.
Yeah.
So
his and you are absolutely right. Having watched these three episodes, they are very much riding Bill and Krista Miller's relationship. Bill Lawrence and Krista Miller's relationship. Yeah. Like, that is exactly what it is. Like, Ted McGinley is playing him, Bill Lawrence.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's like, to me, that's fucking great. Because it's just like, it's just so much fun. Like, that relationship is so much fun to watch because it's so kind of like, it's playfully fighting. And that's kind of like, but it's done so well. It's just done so well. But it's all to say, like, I like the show. It's just, I wasn't expecting to get smacked in the face on a Saturday night by the way, dead wife's shit coming up. Brett Goldstein. I'm like, fuck you guys, man. This shit's hard. Like, this shit's hardcore. At least warn me, motherfucker. Not you.
The Brett Goldstein thing came out of that floored me. I was like, okay, we're gonna deal with the, like, will they, won't they, or should they relationship with his coworker. I'd only seen a few episodes, but, like, I knew her from something. She was in a show, a kind of short-lived show called, what was it called? With the kid from That 70s Show.
Hmm.
It was a half-hour comedy. Like, it only lasted for a couple of years.
Oh, no, let me see. I know her from, she made this movie for Netflix, The Amazing Jessica Williams. That's kind of based on her stand-up.
Topher Grace. What was the name of that freaking show? It's on Hulu. Home Economics.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's still going on, I think.
No, it got canceled.
It did?
Yeah. Okay. A couple of years ago.
Huh.
Let's see. Well, no, just last year, I guess. It had like half a season in 2023. So almost 2 years ago.
Okay. Okay. Hmm. Interesting. Okay. But yeah, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm gonna find a time to watch it and watch it between football and the World Series and all this other bullshit. I will find time to catch up because I'm even behind on Penguin. And I've had to mute shit because I don't want the social media of it all to ruin my, like, my experience with Penguin, which has kind of like been a thing where it's like, if I don't watch it on that Sunday night,
I gotta watch it and Agatha both immediately now because the headlines the next day are always like not necessarily spoilery, but very like plot hinty, and I'm just like. Like, no, I got to watch it immediately because I don't want to know anything about, like, the shows are doing such a good job. I don't want to know anything about them. Like, I want to go in and experience the shows. So, all right. So let's talk about Venom.
Yes. The Last Dance.
Yeah.
Well, that's a contradiction in advertising, isn't it?
Yeah, because is it The Last Dance?
No, it's nowhere near The Last Dance. So,
okay, I mean, I guess it might be Tom Hardy's Last Dance, maybe?
I don't even think, like, this, okay, like, we'll get into it in a second, but, like, let's just first fucking just lay it out there. Spoilers. Null was not played by...
anybody that they fucking said.
Well, actually, I looked at the credits. Do you know who it was played by?
Andy Serkis. Yeah, Andy Serkis.
Yeah,
Andy but there were so many people like, oh, this person's playing Null. This person's playing Null. First of all, it's played by Andy Serkis, but Null's not in the fucking movie. He's not in the movie.
2 seconds. 2 seconds. Like, 2 seconds. He's, like, around, but he's not even his fully form, right? He's not in his form, right? Like, he's just this, like... Okay, so, like, let's go back. And, like, I just wanted to say that, like, because social media made such a fucking big... And this is why I hate influencers that don't know anything other than the little bits of bullshit that they've been given. Because if we look at it, if anybody, like, if any Marvel, like, true Marvel head would have been shown this stuff and are given the stuff, they would have been, okay, so this is nothing. This is literally, like, Guardians of the Galaxy level, like, cameo. I mean, that's literally what it is. It's like, he shows up in, like, two or three scenes, says dialogue. It literally looks like a cutscene from a PS3 game. Not even a PS4, but a PS3 game. And it's like, he's got this, like, long hair, and he's, like, tied to the thing. And it's not even, like, his full form, right? Logan, help me with this, like, understand what the fuck was this about? Like, why even do this?
I don't know why the Null stuff is there. I don't. I other than, like, it was a big thing in the comics a couple of years ago. Like, it's still kind of going on. Like, there, like, all the Venom stuff, it's gotten a little convoluted in the comics, and I stopped giving a shit. So, okay. Other than that, I don't know why Null is there. I have some suspicions that maybe Hardy and company were trying to push to get a bigger place in the Marvel universe proper, and that just kept getting shut down. And so this was maybe another bid to try to make themselves more important than they are. But outside of that, like, I really don't know. It's like they were the only two. So it was co-written by him and Kelly Marcel, who he has a working relationship with. Like, they co-founded a theater company in London. And this is her first feature film. And I hate that we're gonna more or less bag on this movie. Because I will say, I don't think any of the problems with this movie are the fault of a director.
No, absolutely not. This is like, okay, so this is like every other fucking Sony piece of shit that comes down the pipeline. Studio goddamn interference. So I wrote some notes.
Like, what I was gonna say, sorry, not to cut you off. What I was gonna say was, like, if I feel like Tom Hardy, and like, if this is their baby beginning to end, which I have doubts about, they were the only two people on the planet that watch Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer and thought that's how you do a big bad.
Yeah. That's literally what it is. Like, the shittiness of Rise of the Silver. Well, I mean, like, here's the thing, is that
the,
like,
failure of that movie is all the Galactus talk with no fucking Galactus.
Well, and also, like, that is the failure of the studio. Why? Because they didn't give them the budget to do Galactus, but they gave them the go ahead to do Galactus. Like, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, there were, like, my, yeah, like, this movie, okay, so, this is a movie where I, like, you're, like, we had the similar thought process about the main story, because I basically, like, I wrote this out, like, the film's mythology, quote-unquote, is just boring and falls flat. It feels like Morbius or any of the 90s trying to pass itself off as superhero filmmaking. Did everyone just watch Blade, X-Men, and X2, and that's it? And decided that was the way to create a superhero mythology within labs with lab coats and nefariously looking military men. It's literally what we got.
But like, none of that shit goes anywhere.
No, it doesn't. Like, so there's a movie that I feel like is here, but it's a movie that they would never make, which is the road trip between Venom and Eddie. Like, I loved the Mexico stuff.
It's fucking great. It's all great. When it's just that, it's all so good.
Right? Like the Vegas trip, the road trip with not a lizard. Like the Area 52 outside of that. Like
I'm glad that all of these other people got paid, but
yes,
for real, whatever money, not knocking these actors, but whatever money you pay Juno Temple and Chiwetel Ejiofor and Rhys Ifans, you could have saved by casting anybody.
Yep.
Scale exactly. Actors. That's who you could have cast.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you could have taken whatever amount of money that was and just put it back in the budget.
Well, so we basically know that Russell Fonz got it because he probably still had a contract with Sony for Spider-Man.
Okay.
Because, you know, they usually, like, I figured that's the reason why they put him in this movie, because, you know, typically you sign a 3-picture deal, like even as a villain, you sign a 3-picture deal. And so if you think about it, he was in his Spider-Man movie and then he was in Long Way Home. And it makes sense that this would be his last movie, and that's why you casted him. Not because the multiverse works in strange and mysterious ways, and they didn't even name him. They didn't, like, he literally wasn't playing an alt version of the lizard. He was literally just playing a dude, a hippie dude that was into yeah. Fucking, like, that's the laziness.
If you're going to have him in the movie, why not have him as an alternate universe version of Kurt Connors and have him be the dude in the lab? Like, I don't understand why you do that. Also, like, he's in the credits. I watched the movie. Can you tell me where Reed Scott is in this movie?
No, absolutely not. Unless he's the guy that's behind the... Okay, so, you know, like, so there's a lot in this movie that feels like it was about 20 to 30 minutes longer and they cut it again, like the previous two, because there are scenes where Chiwetel or Ejiofor as his, like, again, another chance to do Mordor and have him be an alt version of that character.
Oh, Marvel would have never okayed Baron Mordo. Never would have okayed that.
No, especially considering, like, the rumors we're hearing that, like, he's a part of, he's a big part of the Avengers movie. Yeah, no, absolutely not. But here's the thing, is that they have these random ass moments where he's calling somebody and we see we see behind him, like, we see this character and he's looking at screens.
I assume it's the general dude at the end.
Yeah.
But who the fuck is that?
Exactly.
Who is it?
Who is this? Like, I just, it's so fucking, like, I thought that, like, the laboratory stuff in Morbius was bad. This is equal.
It makes no sense. I don't want to get stuck on the Reed Scott thing, but, like, I don't remember seeing him in the movie, and he's like one of the top billed cast. And, like, I know people will just be like, who the fuck is Reed Scott? But, like, I mean, he's in Veep. Like, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in The Marvelous Miss Maisel. And like, he's not a name actor, but he is a well-known working actor. And yes, he's listed in the credits of this movie, and he's not in the fucking movie. Like, I don't know what, like, it, and it, the, here's the thing. It's not a bad movie. Like, a lot, like, our buddy Tim texted me and was like, hope you don't have high hopes for Venom, because it sucks. So I went in prepared to watch, like, Madam Web. I'm like, I'm going to have fun with how absolutely bad this is. But it's not bad enough for me to have fun with how bad it is. Like,
it really doesn't. It really isn't.
It's made perfectly fine. The effect, specifically the Venom effect, is really well done. The end credit sequence is one of the most fascinating things I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
I don't know what it has to do with the movie, with, like, other than, like, Venom takes over a horse at one point, why it's all venomous animals. But it looks incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's a nothing burger. Like, there's nothing to it. The only things that really work in the movie, like you said, are just the Eddie Venom, like, personal stuff. But that's where the heart of those other movies are anyway. Like,
yeah,
the big set piece stuff in the first two films don't work there either. So I don't know why we thought it would work here. But when, like, you're building up to, like, this is supposed to be a finale, this is the most unfinale final film I've ever seen. Like,
yeah,
nothing happens. I think the Venom death scene is really well done. I think those moments are really great. I think Tom Hardy absolutely knows how to play that. But you built up to nothing. Like, oh, that's why the Null stuff doesn't make any sense, because you built up to Null and then it just doesn't happen. But there's a post-credit scene that, like, because Venom is now dead, somehow that does release Null. So he gets released no matter what. Like, that doesn't make any sense, man.
No, absolutely not. It's, I don't even, okay, so, like, I don't even understand, like, man, yeah, like, okay, so, like, I don't even know how to approach this, because, like, literally, it's a nothing, like, there's 30 minutes of this movie that I love, right? From the moment we meet Eddie, like, after this stupid fucking opening sequence that makes no sense whatsoever about the Null, about Null and the Void, and sending off the creatures and shit, fucking whatever. But as soon as we get back to Eddie and he's in Mexico and we're kind of doing the recap of it, like, we're replaying the scene from No Way Home with Christian, what is his name? Good grief. Oh,
yeah. Christo Fernandez.
Christo Fernandez. Like,
who is the only fucking person in this movie who gets an alternate universe version of himself.
Yep.
What?
Because they couldn't afford anything else, and Sony wouldn't let them. Or Marvel wouldn't let them, because
other fucking people out of the movie. Like, I, again, I'm glad Juno Temple got money. I'm glad Chiwetel Ejiofor got money. I'm glad that Rhys Ifans got money. But, like, at least him, if you were going to have him in the movie, have him play an alternate version, because Sony owns the Lizard. Like, Marvel gets no fucking say-so.
No.
So, no. Have him play an alternate version of Kirk Connors. Eschew all of the other plotline shit. Like, and just have it be, like, here's a story for you for absolutely fucking free. Have it be this universe version of Kirk Connors trying to, like, the fucking lead scientist doesn't have use of one of her arms.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Just make that Kirk Connors and have him trying to develop something with the symbiotes that will, like, help people that are missing limbs. Like, there's a plot for fucking nothing. Like, I love Tom Hardy. But, yeah. Like, dude, if this was your, like, writing, like, you gotta stop, man.
Yeah. Well, and, okay, so, like, here's the thing. This is what makes me feel like it's studio interference. Because, okay, so Kelly Marcel, this may be her first directing gig, but she wrote Saving Mr. Banks on her own. This was a script that made the blacklist. Blacklists are usually non-produced, like originals. And like she literally wrote Saving Mr. Banks on spec. So Disney liked it so fucking much. And it was so in line with Disney, with Disney's like, because, okay, so like the one thing you can't do in Disneyland is talk ill of Walt. Uncle Walt is off limits. So like you making an entire film about Walt and like a biography about Walt and his trying to get what's her name to give up the rights to Mary Poppins, and the way that it's fucking done, like that is like you are a great writer. And then you go and you write all the 50 Shades movies, right? Like, you know, which I don't care about those movies, but like women actually, like, you know, the readership love those movies, right? So, but then you're involved with,
I mean, all she, the movie. She wrote, here's the tale.
Mm-hmm.
She did write the first Venom movie.
Yeah. And the second Venom too. Like she's been a Hardy collaborator since the beginning. She actually, Hardy brought her in. And so I feel like,
You think Noel is studio interference?
Oh, absolutely. I think everything that doesn't
work. This is literally them doing to Hardy and company what they did to Sam Raimi by having them shoehorn Venom into a third movie.
Yep. I feel like that is absolute. Because, okay, so if you take that 30 minutes of Eddie and Venom on the road, right, if you take that stuff and you really look at it, that stuff flies. Like the whole thing of like the end credit sequence with all of the different animals, like that feels like something that's a part of that storyline and not this stupid fucking underground Area 55 null bullshit that comes from fucking like literally Morbius. Like I cannot blame either to the these two creatives. I feel like they were forced into this by Sony to get the budget that they wanted. They had to play the game because we all know Sony is a fucking bunch of assholes when it comes to this stuff. Like so much so that the negotiations for these next Spider-Man movies, like everything I've heard is that Sony has less control over the Spider-Man films now too, because they're so desperate to keep whatever's working in the Spider-Man universe, like working. And they know themselves that they can't fucking do it. It's like, it's almost like, it feels like they're taking the movie and the script, showing it to the Marvel, like the Sony video game people, the video game people giving them copious amounts of notes. And all the Sony people, the development people doing is taking one or two bites of, like, say, the copious amounts of notes that the Sony video game people give them and just say, well, you should do this. You should do Null. Like, there's no real bad guy in here. Well, this is not really a bad guy movie. This is a road trip movie between Venom and, like, as they are trying to escape. I mean, that's just enough, right? Like, having them be framed for the murder of or like having them be like not framed, but like having them be like a part of the murder. And then like why is it Carnage and everybody else in this situation, right? Like why isn't this a chase movie, like part Hope and Crosby like road film mixed in with The Fugitive? Like that's what it feels like it should have been. Because even like watching that credit sequence makes sense if they're constantly on the run from somebody and Venom is trying to jump into different animals to hide himself or to make himself helpful, right? I don't know, man. Like it just, it really seems like two very different movies that were merged together. And that second movie is, it's not Madame Web level of like craziness. It's just stupid. It's just stupid and boring. It's Morbius. It literally,
that's its biggest problem, is the plot. Like, the bigger plot is boring. The character stuff is, like we've been saying, all really works. It's everything outside of Eddie and Venom and Mrs. Chan that just doesn't really work at all. Well, him meeting that family, that's fun. Like, him getting served the fucking vegetarian meal and immediately, like, ejecting it. It's like, no thanks. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it might, like, a lot of that stuff made me chuckle. The scene with Eddie and the kid, I thought was really sweet. It's the bigger plot of the movie that just doesn't work at all. It's boring for something that's, you know, I don't know. It's like, it's mind boggling that you fucked up a movie that didn't have to be anything other than just Tom Hardy talking to himself.
Exactly. And they could have made it all for a lot less money. A lot less money. Like, it's wild to me that when you watch the movie, like I'm fully convinced that this movie was very different. And studio interference just fucked with it to no end, because literally it feels like I said, like, I don't know what else to say other than, like, I feel bad for Hardy and Marcel because the character work is so fucking good. And if this was a Marvel movie, Marcel and Hardy, all they would have had to have done was gone into Kevin Feige and said, so look, we have this Venom idea, but it's kind of small scale. Basically, it's a romantic comedy, aka a buddy cop film, but they're not cops, between Venom and Eddie, and they're diametric opposites. And Kevin would have looked at that and said, a rom-com? Venom and Eddie? I love it. I'm going to give you $100 million, and the 100 is just to go to the Venom effects work. We're gonna do a lot of that, but I want you to make a rom-com. And we wouldn't be having this conversation. We would literally have a trilogy of rom-coms, or like Hope and Crosby road films, right? Like, that's what I feel like is, like, ultimately what the framework they were trying to work with. And Marvel MCU proper, not in association with Marvel. Fucking, I hate that. Like, anytime I see that logo, I am very scared.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, all the Venom movies have gotten them. So,
yes. Well, all of this, like other than the Holland Spider-Man movie, we've all gotten the in association, except for like the first two Raimi films. But, like, I don't know, man, like there's a kernel, like there's, like, again, you want, even with all the trouble that Marvel has had, you want them to have a control over this. Like, okay. So, like, a thing that, like, pisses me off. So watching a trailer, I watched I fucking hate that Kraven the Hunter trailer. I don't care if it's R-rated. Fuck that movie. But what makes me mad
I agree with you. The use of when the man comes around in the trailer is so fucking good, though.
It is.
It's so good.
Okay, but I'm going to throw
something. It's just that out. Movie's going to suck. That's the problem. Well,
so you recast the Rhino? You don't even like have the balls to use, like, Giamatti would have been so fucking game.
Yeah, but they were never going to do that, though. Like, Sony's so busy shooting themselves in the foot with dumb shit that, like, If they were to do goofy fan service shit, even if it was still goofy, at least people would eat it up. You know, there's a meme going around of, like, two dudes, I think they're on a bus. One's leaning against a window, like, crying, And it's like coming from Deadpool Wolverine, and one's leaning against the window crying and says it's just yes. violence and fan service, and the other one's leaning against the window beaming, smiling, going, it's just violence and fan service.
Fan service. Like, I've seen that one.
That's all that movie is. Like, mm-hmm. it's fun, it's violent, it's fan service, and we eat it up. If you were to do something like that, just batshit insane, like, people would be, I feel like, more inclined to go on your fucking ride. And instead, like, what's going to happen, unfortunately, is that people are going to shit all over this movie, and nobody's going to see it, and it will actually be the last Venom movie, because, like, until they need to resurrect it so they don't lose rights for things, like, but it's the Marvels level, I think, where I don't hate it. I think the Marvels is a better movie, but the overall plot is just so like nothing that I don't care about that. The character stuff is really good though.
Exactly. Which always points to, okay, so like everybody, it's very on file that the Marvels was literally like 70% of it was reshot. Yeah. Like, that's why it costs $300 million. Like, this Sony stuff that we don't hear about any of this stuff, but it absolutely feels like the same thing. But also, like, okay, so, like, I'm gonna make a thing. Like, this is, like, literally after the first two movies, which are entertaining, you know, as a whole. Like, they're not entertaining in sections. They're entertaining as a whole, right?
Yeah, they're not great, but they are overall entertaining and... like, just, you know, decent enough and fun enough to quote, waste your time with. This
exactly. This is Joker 2 doo-doo-doo.
I don't think it's as bad.
It's
as
not as movie. Bad, but it's in the ballpark.
I think that there's redeeming shit in this movie. That Joker 2 might have two redeeming scenes. Everything not involving the main plot in this movie, I enjoy.
No, that's true. Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. Okay, yes, yes, yes. I will say, like, but I'm going to say this, like, the best thing that I saw in this movie was the trailer for Love Hurts.
I thought about bringing that up before we got into the movie. Yeah, so first of all, Marshawn Lynch as a fucking heavy is awesome. It's awesome.
Like, I just love the line. He's like,
there were these three kids in front of me at the theater that when he starts talking on the screen, they were like, oh shit, that's Marshawn Lynch.
It's so great. Like, I mean, how could you like, how could you not love
a
movie that's centered around Key? Like, I mean, that's, like, the best like, 1187, the John Wick guy's doing a movie for him, and he gets, like, a romance, like, with Adriana DeBose, who's also going to be kicking ass. Are you fucking kidding? With Marshawn Lynch as the popper? Like, yeah, like, I watched that entire fucking trailer, and I was, like, on the big screen, and I was like, oh, man, this is gonna fucking rock so hard.
I know what you're doing for Valentine's Day.
Oh, fuck yes, man. Fuck yes. You know, but it's like, when a trailer is the best thing that comes out of a movie...
Well, I really... The opening scene of this Venom movie, I thought, this is gonna pop for Adam. Like, he's gonna be like, oh shit, like, yeah, like, let's go, man. Like, it's a little playing into racial stereotypes.
Yes.
But they were in Mexico, so, like, I do get it, but it does lean into that a little bit. But I was like, Adam's gonna fucking love this scene. And it was really good.
It is. Like, I'm not, okay, look, I'm not saying anything other than, like, it's good. It's just, man, the like, okay, so it's like the only reason why, like it's so good, but the other stuff is so fucking annoyingly bad and bland.
Yeah. And anytime they're not on screen, it's definitely not worth watching.
It's not.
Why do we get a half-assed origin story for Juno Temple's character that never, like, they never tell you exactly what happened? You're supposed to understand that her brother died when they both got struck by lightning while they were holding hands. What the fuck? what is that?
I have no idea. And now she's electrical Venom? Like, I didn't get any of it. Like, I really didn't. Like, like, it was very, I can't even, like, I don't know, man. Like, it was one of those things where I just sat there and I went, what? This is fucking, like, no. Why? Yeah. Why the fuck are me? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Please tell me. Because I'd like to really know what's going on here, because it just doesn't, that stuff really doesn't work for me and really upsets me, because it's literally stuff that I hate. I actively hate that kind of, like, let's put the scientist in the dirt, It's like, really?
And there's so much of that shit in the first two movies, too. To, like, go back to that well was so weird. Like, there's a lot in the first movie. Like, it's so weird to me to be like, oh, yeah, scientists, aliens. Like, I don't know. Like I said, you could have come to me, plot for free. Like, oh, y'all got Reese Iphens on retainer? Like, just have him reprise. Like, he'll be an alternate universe Kirk Connors. Like, he found has collected symbiotes, and he's working, like, on trying to, like, create new limbs for people. And, like, there you go. There's a plot for free. Like, you know, he'll already be in New York City. Like, they'll get to New York City. Like, he inadvertently creates the Codex in himself. And then he gets killed, and that brings Null to New York, and then get your big special effects Null battle. And, like, I didn't, well, first of all, the movie's relatively short. I think if you remove the credits and the Null shit, it's not even 90 minutes. And so, like, when you get to the military base, like, that lasts, like, 20 minutes or so, I was like, oh, mm-hmm. shit, like, this movie's gonna have a whole nother hour, because, like, Null hasn't even come to Earth.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't. Like,
no. It absolutely does not. It's terrible. Like, I don't know, man. Like, wrong choice after wrong choice, right? Like, there's just no, like, there's nothing. It's one of those movies where I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is what you, like.
It would have been better to just have it be absolute batshit insane than trying to create something, which is kind of what the first two movies are. It's just like, none of this makes any fucking sense, but, like, hey, we're having fun. I guess the horse thing is the like, climbing in the lobster tank scene of this movie, mm-hmm. maybe. And that's a lot of fun, but, like, it can't even follow its own rules. Like, I guess it has to be bonded with Eddie for the Codex, because it's not
like the Codex thing where it's like
there's it doesn't make any
it makes sense. It doesn't, like, it's just all to fucking do whatever you want to do. Like, I don't know, man. But like,
if you actually paid it off, it might have been worth it. But you don't pay it off.
No, you absolutely do not. Like, there's nothing. Okay, there's a lot of setup, but no payoffs in this fucking movie. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, like, even in the last two movies, there have been setups and payoffs that actually have worked. This movie just feels like
there's some stuff that they set up in the last movie that ultimately doesn't pay off.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of Ravencroft stuff that they could have explored more in future sequels, that it's just ultimately not going to pay off. But it feels a lot like the Amazing, honestly, unsurprisingly, it feels a lot like the Amazing Spider-Man movies, where it's just like, man, you're setting up a lot of shit that you just, you don't have plans for and you cannot pay off. Like, this movie is going to open to less money, I think, than Joker. Granted, it probably didn't cost half as well, maybe a little bit. It's, Joker was what, like over $200 million?
Yeah.
This is probably like 100 and change, maybe. But yeah, it's not going to light anything up and make them. They'll just do what they did with Amazing Spider-Man 2. There'll be fan backlash and be like, oh shit, well, we got to like rethink this and go back to the well. And it's just, that's what's really frustrating, is to have them it's not even an appetizer, because you don't ever plan on giving us a meal. Like, don't fucking give me a potato skin and then just be like, did you like that? Well, here's a cheese stick. Like, where's the steak, asshole? Like, I'm tired of eating one little appetizer thing. Like, don't bring me this shit. Like,
no, like, when are
if
we
you're
gonna
just going to serve me appetizers, then tell me, but don't add the like, oh, the steak is coming. The steak is coming. Don't fucking tell me that. Say, hey, it's just all appetizers.
Well, when are we going to learn as an audience that Sony is not, like, as soon as we start rejecting the Sony stuff and they start losing money on a grand scale?
I think we have. And they do lose money on shit like that. They lost money on Madam Web. They lost money on Morbius. More money on Morbius because they released it a second time. They're going to lose money on Kraven. Like, but the problem is they're so, like, Spider-Man is all we have. That they have to keep making this shit, because if there is not a Spider-Man adjacent film in active development for, I think, 2 years, they rights immediately go back to Marvel. So they have to have a Spider film in development on the release schedule at all times. But the problem is, they don't know what to fucking do with it. And I don't know, man. Like, everything can't be Spider-Verse. I get that. But how can you have this one thing that, like, oh, hey, you've done two of these movies. Yes, there are problems with paying people, and that needs to be fixed, and overworking them. But these are two absolute fantastic films. And this other shit, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, the Venom films are fun. The first two are fun. This one's mostly boring with a little bit of fun. But yeah, it's so frustrating, man.
It really is. Like, I know that Tom Hardy is a very mercurial, like, performer and person in real life. I mean, he literally feels like Russell Crowe 2.0. But when he delivers, like, when you're watching him as Venom, he actively cares about the character, and he makes it, like, he elevates everything in that movie. Why are you not, like, if you're going to lose money, why not just let him off the leash and just let him do whatever the fuck he wants? Like, because this is not it. Like, this is definitely not, like, if I were to talk to Tom Hardy, like, at a bar, and he's kind of drunk, and we were talking about this movie, and I bet you anything, if I could get him talking, he would talk about fucking ridiculous studio interference. Like to the point to where he probably had to take notes that were ridiculous. Like, oh, well,
I mean, it's probably why, like, Venom the Last Dance, when they went into it, he was probably not like, this is definitely my last outing as Eddie.
Yeah.
But by the end, he was like, this is my last outing as Eddie.
I guarantee you he will be back for, like, if Secret Wars ends up being anything of the time trials, or like the trials and stuff, like if it's something like that and we're dealing with alt versions of things, I guarantee you, if like he will probably be a part of it because he is so good at that. And giving him a little role in that bigger universe would only help Marvel, right? Because it like allowed, like, let us show you what we can really do with this character. Kind of like what they did with all of the villains in No Way Home, right? Like, it's weird to, like, I constantly think about this, which is like, it's weird that they, like, No Way Home had everybody but Venom in it. And it's like, but Venom could totally have been in, like, it was a whole pop at the end, right? Like, the whole end credit sequence. But what you really wanted was Marvel's version of Venom, right? Like, Marvel Prime, not the studio interference Venom. Because I always feel like Marvel's, like, Venom has been a studio interference note since the fucking beginning, since Spider-Man 3. He's been something that they've wanted in, and he's been forced into things, right? There's never been an organic, let's bring him in. I almost wonder if you could probably do that in an Avengers movie. You're like, since we're playing with the multiverse, let's bring him in and show what we can do and kind of embarrass them the way that you embarrass them with No Way Home, right? Because the Lizard, Sandman, Electro, all those characters were shit upon release. Not Sandman. Sandman was kind of like, everybody was like,
yeah, but it was
so slight.
Yeah, it's such a, like, just, yeah. It was short shrifted because of how much Raimi had to shoehorn into the movie to satisfy the studio. Yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I guess when we get the J. Jonah Jameson fucking building the Bugle from the ground up and there's no superhero in sight, you know, that'll be a fun movie. Like, how about Michael Keaton as young J. Jonah Jameson? Because even though he's old, he would still be young, right? So,
but also, they still have him on contract.
For
Vulture, so, for multiple movies, right? Like that never went anywhere.
It'll be the paper, but or not the paper. What was the newspaper movie he did? The paper. Okay.
Oh God, I love that movie.
but you know, just him building the Bugle, and then like the movie ends with like. The Bugle finally becomes like a big paper because of Spider-Man and their coverage of Spider-Man.
I mean, at least we, like, in the stupid shit of things, at least we have Spider-Man Noir. And like,
which we got the first images of. There's not really anything to talk about. It literally looks like test footage of the costume. So, it looks fine. But again, that's also a fucking co-production. Like, Sony can't finance it itself. Like, it's in production with Amazon.
Yeah, and I guarantee you Amazon's whole thing was, you're going to let our creatives take it because we know what we're doing. Like, literally. Like, I can guarantee it. And you know what? I feel better about Amazon's creatives taking it over than Sony because
me too. And that's fucking sad, man. It's really, really sad. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. We all know that Kraven is going to fail. Like,
so badly.
They're lucky they're going into production on a new actual Spider-Man movie next year. Mm-hmm. Once they can get the money to pay people to make a third Spider-Verse movie, we'll have that. How are you not able to pay these people?
Because you're fucking assholes. Because you're fucking greedy assholes. That's all there is to it. You're fucking greedy assholes. Like, you took the half a billion that the first one made and the close to billion that the second one made, and you did what with it? You kept it for your fucking self. Fuck you. Seriously, fuck you, Sony. Like, you take something, like, your flagship. Like, because you can't take ownership of Spider-Man. We all know that that's Marvel and Kevin. Like, literally smacking your hands away, saying, don't touch that. You just pay us the money for the budget and you let us fucking do it. You give us the $250 million and leave it alone. Shut up. Leave it alone. Like, that's literally what you're doing. It's like a small child. You know what it reminds me of? Sony is a child that's helping their dad in the garage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Flash. And what is the dad doing?
Just give me the fucking screwdriver.
Give me the Phillips head screwdriver, you fuckhead. Like, we've all seen it before. Don't beat that dad.
Like, it starts off with just like, hand me the screwdriver. No, that's a hammer. Hand me the screwdriver. No, that's not a screwdriver. And it just ends with like yelling and, yes. and some kid crying.
Exactly. And being scarred for life. Yeah. And not wanting, and not to, like, you know, the reason why, you know, the reason why our generation just takes our shit to mechanics, because our fucking dads yelled at us all.
Yep. Yep.
Yelled
exactly.
at us. Because
exactly. Exactly.
We didn't know what a wrench was. We didn't know what a 8mm socket was. We didn't know what
that okay. was. Sony doesn't know what the fuck Spider-Man is. So.
You know, they don't.
All right.
But they can make Spider-Man games. They can keep on making Spider-Man
yeah.
games.
Yeah. Home,
you know, and I honestly think that they should just fucking, like, at this point, give up Spider-Man. Like, yeah. really? No one's gonna fucking, like, they'll still give you the games because the games are unrivaled and you're making so much money off the games. You're losing so, like, all the money they make off of the Spider-Man movies, they lose because of the Spider-Man adjacent movies. So, like, yep. this is typical Hollywood bullshit of, We take a massive loss and then we're just waiting to break even on the next big blockbuster. Yeah. It's like, oh God.
Yeah.
yeah. And then we're going to be back in it in December. Like, you and I are going to be having the same damn conversation because of Kraven the Hunter.
I hope that Kraven is Madam Web level of like, what the fuck is happening? Like, that yeah. will make me happy. Like, I know they didn't make any money. I know everybody hates that movie. I get it. I don't think it's a good movie either. But I at least had fun watching how fucking terrible it was. So,
it's like a CT. It's like if Tua decided to direct a movie and they
yeah.
gave him a Spider-Man movie. That's like, it's like that much of a CTE, like, in, like, oh my God. Brain damage, the movie.
All right.
And the Hunter.
Well, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. Or more importantly, you can go read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com. And I'm going to be talking to Logan about a couple things, but I've gotten like the all but issue volume 50 of
that'll be a while coming because I'm still making through that show.
Yeah, but what I am gonna say is
I'll have it by the end of the
officially
year.
Yeah, and so like we're just gonna talk scheduling and we should start having some new content from Logan in regards to his column that, like, you know, I never tell you this, but it does great numbers. Like, it does, it really does. Like it, like, you've got to follow.
I haven't had one in a while.
So. It remains like all of your moving pictures remain in like the ether of like hits. And so like at the end of the day, like it gives us a nice tidy monthly number of hits. So like people are reading them and they're consistent, like they're finding them and stuff. So like, you know, it's great stuff. But we will be back. We will be back next week. You know,
probably talking finale of Madam Web. not Madam Web. Agatha All Along.
Agatha All Along, because it's coming up. You know. So yeah, we'll be back next week, and we have officially spared you, some of you, but also we have denied others our NFL talk.
Yeah. That would be too much to get into. So maybe a little bit next week. So, all right. We will see you guys then. Number 3, Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now.